The gurus of How To are here, Alvin and Lawrence Hugh Bell, also known as Accurate Billing, Building.
Ding. Plural.
Well, I'm from Brooklyn. I leave out the D's and the T's. Building inspectors of Brooklyn, New York, and they visit us once a month to answer your home repair questions and related questions. We also usually have a little quiz, and have I left anything out?
And we talk about subjects that we find fascinating at the moment.
Yes.
And what is the most fascinating subject of the moment, Lawrence?
Lately, I've been getting quite a number of actually, from one of our listeners called me. I was speaking on the phone last time I was on, and he was telling me about his – because we brought up about lining chimneys. And he said, well, the chimney guy said that I have to have my chimney lined. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, I go, what year was your building built? And he said 1956. And all buildings, you know, in this century, when they build, especially a suburban home, have liners in the chimney. They're usually a clay liner that, you know, people notice when they stick out of the chimney, they're usually this terracotta tile. And that's how we build chimneys. That's a standard and state-of-the-art, and that's what we do. So he says to me, he says, well, the guy said I had to have it lined. I said, really? And he said, yes. He says, they say that all chimneys have to be lined. That's part of the code. So I said, yeah, but your chimney is already lined. And now he's having other problems, so things are not working the way they were. So whatever this particular individual put in didn't obviously work the way it was intended. But the thing that really came to me, he says, well, he said, in order for me to make that work, I have to do it. And he says, it's part of the code. And that immediately went to my head. I said, you know, when someone says it has to be done because the code says so, I'm not saying that he's lying. But you should always ask them, what code is that and what's the code number? Because a lot of contractors will use that excuse as, it's the law, so that's why you have to give me $10,000. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not saying that necessarily that people are lying, but at least be a, you know, an educated consumer and ask them, what code is that?
So did you check out the code?
No, because it was in New Jersey, and that's not what the conversation was really about. And this was not really a client; it's a listener.
What I'm getting from this is,
yes,
if you're in a really old house, 19th century or earlier,
mm-hmm,
then you should make sure that your chimney is lined.
Right.
But if it's 20th century, the laws in most states.
No, it's the code. The point I'm getting at is that people will use the excuse as a code on any installation to get you to spend money. And that's one of the things that really bothers me, that it may not necessarily be the code. Because, for instance, a building built in 1916 does not have to comply to 2011 code, because it was built under a old code.
And it's grandfathered
in. But a lot of contractors will use that excuse to get you to do stuff, where he says, oh, well, it must be the code, so I must have to do it. Question that. See what code it is. And if you don't, ask somebody who would know, like an architect or an engineer, before you go and part with your money.
Or a
building inspector who could point you in the right direction, or even look up the code themselves.
When you come here, we always have a quiz, which we throw out to our audience. And by the way, the number to call if you have a question or know the answer to the quiz is 646-829-3985. You can also leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Can I read it this time?
Oh, you may.
Sure.
I think it's his show.
Mm-hmm.
No. You're my guest. Name the masonry or brick infill between the framing of walls and floors to increase fire and sound resistance, generally found in older frame structures usually built before the 20th century.
Yes. In fact, the building that we own, as Accurate Building Inspectors, has this same technology into it, because the building that we bought was built in about 1875, 1885. So we found that inside our building, and it has a name.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So put on your thinking caps, and maybe you can come up with it.
And if they come up with the answer, they'll get a copy of Save Energy, Save Money by George Merlis and Alvin Ubell.
Mm-hmm.
Should we go to some calls? Or,
well, sure.
Let me read something that came in from Danielle from Long Island.
Okay.
Sounds complicated to me. I want to replace my old basement windows. Two are casement. The others are hoppers. The steel frame is embedded in the poured concrete foundation on three sides, and the top is wood. Should I use custom-made vinyl or standard size windows? I was told the frame has to be cut, and a contractor would use a wood frame.
Well, you can, actually, you can do almost anything. There's today, they can make windows to actually fit into the opening that you have. It is somewhat custom-made, but there are local guys that don't charge that much more money for a standard window than a custom-made window to fit into the place, because it's the same technology, and it goes together pretty easily. But taking the steel old windows out really is a job. Usually sometimes it has to be done with a cutting torch or even like a saber saw, or what do you call it?
Sawzall.
A sawzall, which cuts out the window frame and everything else. And that is probably more labor intensive at that point to take out what is there than to put in a brand new window.
Because sometimes these old hopper windows were sometimes poured in place when the foundation was poured,
yes,
they put the frame in there and tacked it in, and then poured the concrete around it,
so or brick it up around it,
yeah.
So it could be rather irregular.
Well, no, it's just that this frame is now part of the foundation, and so the metal part that makes up the outer perimeter of the frame is part of the foundation. And like she was saying, yes, most likely they're going to have to build a wood frame to now attach the new window to. And that's not uncommon, and I've seen it more than a few times, and that's probably what they're going to have to do. As far as the choice of what window they're going to use, the only thing I would go with, I would probably go with a vinyl window in that particular situation because of its exposure to moisture. And also
that's true.
And also the wood framing that they use should be pressure-treated lumber. It shouldn't just be standard fir or Douglas fir or
why is that? To prevent warping?
No, because it's probably close to the ground and it will be exposed to a lot of water, and you don't want the framing rotting out. Also, if it's close to the ground, you don't want termites coming in through that new wood framing. So it should be pressure-treated lumber.
Yes, and also the masonry that is there is it will transfer moisture from the masonry to the wood, which will cause the wood to rot in due course.
I hope that helps you, Danielle. Let's go to some of our calls. Our first caller is Susan from Scarsdale. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Sue.
Hi.
Hey, what's up?
Okay. I would like to know what material can connect a stainless steel countertop to a glass backsplash that would be watertight. Silicone has already been used, and the water got right under that, so that was removed. Mm-hmm. And an epoxy was applied, a clear epoxy of some sort. Now I see water going under that as well. So is there anything, because it can't be grout, because that will not adhere to the countertop or the glass, and I didn't want grout anyway, and so that's why I find myself in this problem, and this is new construction.
Well, in the use of any kind of adhesive, especially the epoxies and the silicones, one of the most important thing to do is that both surfaces have to be thoroughly cleaned. In other words, you got to wipe the two intersecting sections of whatever dissimilar materials you're using, generally with some sort of solvent like alcohol, and let it dry. And then what you're describing, my choice would have been either a white or clear epoxy, and put it in very carefully. And if it's permitted to, and it should not be the 2 minute or 5 minute epoxy. It has to be the 24 hour epoxy, because that is really waterproof material, and that has a better bond than anything you can find between two dissimilar kinds of material.
So, Susan, did you use the 24 hour epoxy?
I think they did, because they told me it had to cure for 24 hours.
And it still leaked.
I still see water sort of seeping back there, and I'm concerned because that cannot
because
leak to anything.
They
good.
Probably didn't clean the surface.
Whether they actually cleaned the surface properly is also questionable. But I'm kind of thinking that if they knew what they were actually building, in other words, if they knew they were building a stainless steel countertop that went into a glass backsplash, I would have actually had the countertop built with a groove in it
So, like a dado,
like
a dado, or a rabbit,
or a rabbit at the back of the countertop, and then have the glass with a gasket slip into this groove, so it would receive the glass, and that would act as a water seal, and that way, and you could put a gasket in there that could be clear, it could be black, it could be white, it could be a number of colors,
and
it wouldn't matter. Because we can't see it.
Right.
So
yeah.
Can we retrofit this?
You know what? Don't be so negative. What's with the negativity? You know, maybe I would just have
perhaps.
To. Perhaps. I mean, perhaps. Someone, you know, it's someone who would actually want to take the time to actually think and design, which I would go back to the person who originally came up with this concept to come up with a way to – you know, retrofit what you have there into this. I don't think
impossible. Larry, you're saying he caused the problem. He should try to come up with a solution.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And if they need to contact us, by all means, give me a call or send me an email, and I'd be more than happy to talk to them because this is actually kind of interesting to me.
Yes.
So, I mean, I'm like Dr. House. I only take the cases that are interesting, you know. But it you should be able to do it and not have
I hope
you're
not like him in a lot of ways, too, Larry.
I do have my house moments. I have to. All of a sudden, someone will be in conversation. I'll go, oh, yeah, and then walk off, but not much nicer.
Thank you for calling us, Susan, and good luck. And now we go to, what happened?
We
Dave
got tilt.
From Beechwood, New Jersey. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Dave.
How you doing, guys?
What's up?
I have a house built in 1974, and it's funny you guys were talking about the chimneys. About 3 years ago, we had a chimney sweep come out to clean it, and we have two flues, one for an oil-burning furnace that we had and one for a fireplace, a wood-burning fireplace. And he said he would not touch the oil-burning flue because the terracotta liners were shifted, and he didn't want to break anything or knock anything out.
Uh-huh.
And he said he wanted to line it.
Right.
Since then, we've gotten that replaced. But when I went up to kind of inspect the masonry myself, I noticed that when I was looking down the wood-burning fireplace now, those tile flue panels have shifted as well.
Well,
is that something I need to worry about?
It is something you need to worry about because it depends on how far down the shifting is. But what happened there was they shouldn't have shifted, which tells me that the masonry installation at the beginning, when the building was built, was of a poor quality. And
well,
so, go on.
It is. I'm sorry, because right now, like the cement on the skin coat is starting to crack and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the same chimney inspector actually told me that at that time they sometimes pack the voids with sand, which I find kind of, odd. But he said that moisture got into that sand, and then when it froze, popped the seams and everything.
Yeah. What happens is with the chimney, a lot of people don't realize that when the chimney is firing up, no matter what kind of combustion material you're using, whether it's gas, oil, or wood, one of the byproducts is water. When that kind of combustion comes up, the water comes up, and in the wintertime, if the outside air is very low temperature, that moisture starts to condense on the inside of the chimney, and then when it freezes again, it starts to deteriorate the chimney and the cement. This is not an unusual situation.
But the problem with lining that wood-burning fireplace is that what's going to end up with a smaller flue size than what's been designed, and it was designed specifically for your fireplace, and your fireplace, which was a part of the conversation that I had with that listener, was that it wasn't burning well anymore. It was smoking. Smoke was coming back into the space, even with the damper open, because the cross-sectional area was reduced. Now, they do make similar shaped liners of the liner that's there, but those are sometimes very difficult to get down because, you know, the tolerances are a lot closer. Depending on where the shifting of the tile or the flue tile liner occurred, you may be able to either go straight in from the side, remove some brick and repair it, or worst case scenario is you have to rebuild the chimney.
Yeah,
which would be bad, but this is, you know, to get the fireplace to work properly, that may be what has to be done.
Yeah. Well, for those people out there that have fireplaces that are not working properly, don't draw properly, the rule of thumb is that the flue size has to be at least 10% of the hearth opening. And if it's greater than the 10% of the hearth opening, then you'll have a good flue, a good draft, and it should work very well.
Thank you so much for calling us. We've only gotten one person who thinks he knows the answer to the quiz.
But well, let's read it again. Let's see.
Okay. See if we can get masonry or brick infill between the framing of walls and floors to increase fire and sound resistance generally found in older frame structures. And let's go to that person, Sam from Brooklyn. What do you think it is?
Hi, Sam.
Sam,
you there?
Yeah. Hello.
Yes.
Is it nogging?
How did you know that?
because I have tons of it both in my framed walls and in my backyard.
In other words, you took it out of your framed walls and
I took it out of my framed walls and replaced it with insulation.
Okay.
That's okay. That's good.
And right. I thought I was giving it away when I said put on your thinking caps.
That went over my head completely. Yes. Okay, anyway, you hold on and someone will take your name and information and you'll get a copy of Save Energy, Save Money by Al Ubell and George Merlis. Okay?
And thank you for calling. And we're going to go to a little break. And when we come back, more of your calls and your comments to the Gurus of How To, Al and Larry Ubell. Our phone number is 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. It's been gone such a long, long time. How you gonna fix this broken heart of mine? I must have been about 3 or 4. You were the cute little boy next door. Anyone could see in my little girl eyes. You were the guy that you've been gone such a long, long time. How you gonna fix this broken heart of mine? And we're back with the Gurus of How To, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors. In fact, congratulations. You're celebrating your 50th anniversary as Accurate Building Inspectors.
That's right. It's been a long haul. They had a lot of ups and downs due to the economy, but we survived 50 years.
It's great. We're very happy, and people are very impressed when you actually have the number 50 in front of your name.
Yes. So. Yes.
Yeah, but I'm always surprised when I go by places that say – you know, established 2008. Like,
yes.
Wow. Well, that's a tradition.
But you know, they say in business.
You have 1961.
But they say in business, if you can actually survive 3 years, you're already on a good track. So 2008, wow, at least you made the 3 years. So,
John in New Jersey writes, I just finished renovating a spare room and it's time to hang new doors for the closet and entry. I have jigs to route hinge and doorknob locations. Any tricks or hints? Because every door I've hung before has needed a few adjustments before they work well.
Well, hanging of doors is...
Let me just say one thing.
Go ahead.
The most important thing to make sure that the door frame, whether it's a sliding door for the closet or a bifolding door or a regular traditional door with two hinges, make sure the door frame is plumb, both from front to back and side to side.
That's exactly what I wanted to say.
You know, that is the most important. You got to make sure that the insert of the frame that you put in is true, plumb, and square. If it's not any of those things, the door is either going to close by itself or open by itself, or it may not even close at all, or it may be stuck in the closed position and you'll have to use your shoulder to open it.
Yes, that is paramount. In fact, as a cabinet maker, when in my younger years, you come into a site and you have to hang the doors, and the framing is cockeyed. The first thing I have to do is straighten it all out. I have to sometimes break what the carpenter did and make it very, very plumb. So the first tool that you really have to get is a level, a really good level, and the level has to be checked for accuracy before you walk out of the hardware store with it. And the way you do that is what they call the standard flip-flop method. You take the level, you put it on a table, and you see the reading, and you flip it around totally, and it should have the same reading. Then you turn it upside down, should have the same reading. Every way you put it, it should always be the identical reading.
So you can ascertain whether the level is on the level.
That's exactly. Because a lot of people start putting these door frames in with a level,
That is not.
That's not level. That's and why it's not coming out. Also, a framing square isn't bad either for checking the corners. Also, doing a little math, doing the Pythagorean theorem by doing the 90-degree app, which you have to look up. I'm not going to get into that right now.
Another way of doing that for those people who put doors on is to measure from corner to corner, from opposite corner to opposite corner, and check whatever the measurement is, and do it again to the opposite corner again. The other opposite corner. It
has to be exactly the same.
Right to the 32nd of an inch. If it is off just a slight bit, that door ain't going to fit.
The rest of it is just follow the instructions for putting in the hinges, putting in the locks, and use the proper measurements from the floor, and it should work out fine.
Catherine from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm wondering, we have a house that was built in 1905, and when they re-sided it somewhere, I guess probably in the 50s, one side of my house has something called ghetto brick on it.
Yes. It's more like asphalt roofing material.
Yes, and it looks like brick.
Yeah.
it's so horrible.
It's basically like these 2-foot by 2-foot panels of brick which looks like a roofing material because it has granular surface.
Right.
Okay.
Well, a piece of it.
And by the way, I never called it ghetto brick, but thanks for the politically correct nomenclature.
But that's actually what it was called because I looked it up to try and find what, you know, about the history of it. Yeah, that's what it's called.
Wow.
So I wanted to try and repair it because a piece of it came off, and I have two kids in college, so I'm looking for a 3-year fix on it.
Right.
How do I go about patching this? I have like maybe a 2 by 2 foot piece.
But let me ask you a question. How visible is this?
It's visible because I'm detached on one side. It's on my detached side.
Well, what you could do is if you find a portion of the house where this so-called ghetto brick is
we're coughing on this, by the way.
It's on one side.
That is on a side that nobody sees. You can cut a piece out of that and put it where.
Well, the rest of the house is at the front and the back are vinyl or aluminum siding.
Uh-huh. Well, so the whole side with the ghetto brick is exposed.
Yeah. So I wanted to.
You can't
try
cut anything out.
Maybe would roofing material work?
No, but what you might want to do is actually get regular. Yes, I know this sounds even worse.
Good.
But what I would do is take some roofing shingles and paint them to match.
Ooh, that's smart.
It's a temporary fix. It's probably not going to look great, but at least it won't draw your eye to it.
But don't they make this stuff anymore?
No, it's gone.
No, it's gone.
Gone free.
It's gone, gone. Actually, this material is underneath the vinyl siding of my house, too.
You know, there are certain places.
Can you cut out a little piece and send it to me?
No, mine's not brick. Mine was actually this gray color.
That material, in certain cities around the United States where they have a landmarks commission, like they have in New York, if you have that material.
You got to keep it.
I know. It's horrible.
Have you checked other cities like Chicago or,
No, I haven't. I've been looking, you know, basically around here and out, you know,
check,
in
you
the
know,
Brooklyn area.
Because
it is very popular.
It is popular, especially in the Midwest.
Right.
So give that a shot. Maybe you could find a piece. But, you know, whatever piece you're going to find is not going to match anyway.
Right. So painting it, I could do my own mix and then just paint it.
Yeah, exactly.
Good idea.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for calling us.
Good. Want a show. Good.
And now we go to Ellen from Manhattan. You have another chimney problem?
Ellen?
Ellen?
Hello?
Okay, Ellen. Uh-oh. It was nice talking to you.
We'll do it again next time.
Rietta.
Hi, Rietta.
Hi, Rietta.
What's up?
Hi. This is about a porch that's an exterior porch.
Mm-hmm.
Out on Long Island, the southern part of Long Island.
Yes.
And it's elevated. It was built around the 60s. And because of the weather that we've been having, the storms, the whatever, snows, storms, et cetera.
What's happening?
There's the screening. It's a screened-in porch. So the screening has come away from its frame, A. And then, so that's a problem as to how to secure the screening. One suggestion was to have removable frames, but then that means that the porch becomes an open porch, and I don't think that's very safe or secure for the elderly person who lives in the house.
Right.
Pests, not a visual deterrent at that point.
Yeah.
Secondly, a permanent frame, but how would you secure that so that the kinds of storms we've been having wouldn't...
I have to say that I'm a little at a loss here only because I don't really have a visual. And in this particular kind of situation, that would be incredibly useful. I mean, how would I secure this kind of frame is if these are individual frames, I would come up with some kind of bracket or hanging mechanism where I could actually, like, almost like the way that a cabinet door goes in on the top and then drops in on the bottom. I would actually take maybe two pieces of wood or angle aluminum and make it, you know, longer than the frame, slip it up, and then let it come back down. And even for a little bit more security, maybe put pins in at the bottom so it couldn't rattle up and down. And that would be one off the top of my head. But without actually seeing the application, it would be difficult for me to actually give a definitive on this one, because this looks like a total custom. It's not like, you know, how do you change a door lock, or how do you change a faucet?
Right.
That's pretty, you know, standard. But for this, it would be very custom.
Yeah, the other way is that whatever the opening is where the screen is to make a new screen being a bit larger enough that they could just place it against the opening and just put screws in all the way around to hold it in place.
That's an excellent idea.
Yes, that's very simple that way.
That's excellent. And the second question was about flooring on the same porch.
Yeah.
That it's a wood floor, and it seems like it absorbs paint, including a fairly good quality deck paint. Again, it was suggested that maybe indoor-outdoor carpeting could be put over it, but I'm wary of that. I'm cautious because, again, mold, mildew, it's very humid, a lot of rain.
Well, what's underneath this deck? The open air?
It's all open, yeah.
Well, that's not, especially since it's kind of an enclosed porch, using indoor-outdoor carpet may not be so bad because it will ventilate from underneath, and so it's not that big a deal. Also, the fact that when you're not using the space, because it is, you know, during the winter, you would roll it up and just stow it away during that period of time so it could dry out and ventilate properly.
Most of the indoor-outdoor carpeting is made from nylon or rayon or orlon, and it doesn't support any kind of fungus growth or something like that because it isn't biodegradable. So those are the kinds of good carpeting that work very well on a situation that she described.
Okay. We have a number of people who have written in. Craig in Brooklyn asks, is there any substantial saving or are there any substantial savings in cutting off the boiler's pilot light during the warmer months?
Yes, there is a saving of that pilot light burning all summer long. The idea is that today on the new boilers, they have what they call an electronic ignition, which when the unit is down, it doesn't work, and all of a sudden the electronic ignition relights the pilot light, similar to that of a spark plug situation in a car engine. However, the relighting of that pilot light takes a little doing. You have to hold down a button for about a 2.5 or 3 minutes and then take a long thing with a match and get it all the way in there and just hold the button. You got to be really ambidextrous to do this kind of
lighting. Other thing I want to say about that is that it also there is a positive effect of having the pilot light on. It tends to keep the equipment dry. Because it keeps it a little warm.
But you can turn it down, can't you?
No. My suggestion is that if you're using the pilot light to keep the equipment dry, then your cellar or basement is too damp.
That's true.
So you need to consider doing dehumidification for the basement anyway. And by the way, why I'm on that subject matter, basement should be between 45 and 55 relative humidity. If it's below that, you need to do something. And ventilation won't always help. Dehumidification helps. So that's another. But yes, you will realize the savings by shutting off the pilot.
Johanna on the Upper West Side writes, a contractor told me that the price of asphalt roof shingles is going to go up with oil prices. So it would be a good deal to buy them now at $75 a square foot, now being offered by a local supply store. Although we probably won't be replacing the current 18-year-old roof upstate for a few years.
No, shingles don't go bad, especially if they're stored in a cool, dry place.
That's true.
Okay. The thing that beats up shingles is leaving them out in the sun. Okay, so
but do you think that they will go up because of oil prices? Won't they go down again?
You know what? If I knew that, I wouldn't be here. I would be a few blocks south of here making millions. So I don't know. I'm not going to talk about speculation on oil and oil products. I mean, as everything goes up, because it is an oil byproduct, it will probably go up too.
Well, since we're talking about shingles, John in Orangeburg, New York writes, my roofing shingles are growing lichens. Rather than scrape them off, possibly damaging the shingles, can I use a mild bleach solution to kill them?
What you can, if you have something, some moss or something growing on the roof or something like that.
But let me say something about moss growth on asphalt shingles. It does not affect the shingle, period. It looks bad, it looks funky, but it does not affect the shingle. And no matter what you use to remove it, they will grow back unless you change the reason that it's growing. And why is it growing is because the trees over your building are shading the building and dropping the biological material, which is the supporting food for the moss. So don't do anything as far – once the sun hits that material, it will go away. So you either have a tree issue, a shade issue, or something like that. But it will – if it's a wood roof, on the other hand, now you got serious problems and you got to take care of it.
But he didn't have a wood roof.
No.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, let's go to Maria from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm talking about my 90-plus-year-old house. With the bad rains we had about a week ago, I've now got about 6 or 8 inches of standing water in my lower unfinished basement. So I've gotten in a company that's been around for many years. I won't say their name, but they're using or they're proposing to do something called a pressure release system, where basically they're going to dig a trench about 1 foot deep the whole way around the perimeter of the room. Mm-hmm. They're going to put in PVC piping, gravel, and then cover that back up. And the piping's all going to be connected to a sump pump.
Yes.
I just wanted to ask you, is this, I mean, from the research I've done, it seems to be a common way to address this problem. I just wanted to hear your professional opinion on how typically effective that can be. And by the way, they're saying that the water is coming up through the floor. It's not coming through the walls or through the Bilco doors or anything like that.
Okay. Yes, because that's what's known as a hydrostatic pressure. And yes, that system does work very well. It's also known as a French drain or a subslab drainage system. But I do have one question for you. How often does this flooding condition occur?
If there's really bad rains, like we, I mean, this isn't the first time this has
happened.
It's
not the first time. Okay, so what you could do is, yes, it's effective. If you didn't want to spend that amount of money, you could actually just put in a bunch of sump pumps everywhere in the building to alleviate that pressure also, which is a lot less expensive. Is it as effective? Well, if your basement is not being used as a finished area, then I wouldn't – it really is that kind of judgment call. But they are effective, very effective.
The biggest problem is having these French drains and the drains in the basement. Is that if you don't have electricity, you don't have any pumping system.
Now, and as Japan has learned with the nuclear facilities.
Yes, they have.
Now, we have run out of time,
mm-hmm.
but people continue to call, and you encourage them to write to you, but they have to send a phone number?
They have to leave a phone number. They can either look at our website, which is www.accuratebuilding.com, or larry@ubell.com.
UBELL.com.
Or you can follow me on Twitter, at Larry Ubell at Twitter, which I really like because I'm up to 41 followers. I'm a real Twitter powerhouse at this point.
Everybody to know that you'll be back on April 13th, which is not a Friday. I want to congratulate you for your 50th anniversary. And
next time when we're here, we're going to show all of America how to go forth and fix, save energy money, and
do it safely.